episode 373 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Secret Wars Saturday episode. For those not familiar, Secret Wars Saturdays are part of the larger Marvel Chronology project that we're working on. Wanted to get caught up on current Marvel stuff, actually. So you're probably wondering, well, then why the heck are you reading comics from the mid-80s, Jace? Well, I'll tell you. So I did want to get caught up, and my thought was after the latest Secret Wars and everything that went on with that in 2015, the Jonathan Hickman Secret War, where Marvel actually paused all their books and they had a series of miniseries going on, and then it was kind of a new Marvel universe, a new jumping on point, supposedly, at that point. But I had heard that basically that Secret War event from Jonathan Hickman was kind of the culmination of all the work that he had done both on Avengers and Fantastic Four at Marvel. Like, all his Marvel work had been leading up to that Secret War event. So I was like, okay, well, let me see if I can find a reading order and read all the Hickman stuff into Secret War, and then I'll be ready for the new stuff, right? So that was my plan. And I came across a website called Comic Book Herald, and he did indeed have a Secret Wars reading order. But it was a complete Secret Wars reading order, meaning it not only had Hickman's Secret Wars, it had everything leading up to it, all of Hickman's Fantastic Four, all of his Avengers, which was exactly what I was looking for, but it even went back further than that. Previous iterations of Secret War, including the Secret Wars 2 and the original Marvel Superhero Secret Wars from the mid to early 80s that I remembered, you know, reading as a kid. So I thought, why not? Why not go back and read it right from the beginning, you know, 30-year reading order, checking in with the Marvel Universe through a lot of different eras, even eras where maybe I wasn't reading as much Marvel as other times. So that's kind of how we got started. There's always a link in the show notes on Secret Wars Saturdays, so you can go and check out the Comic Book Herald Secret Wars reading order for yourself. He's got kind of different levels. I'd say like three different levels. One where you read absolutely everything, another where it's the key issues, and then a third where you're just reading the Secret Wars titles themselves. So I encourage you to go and check it out. As I said, links in the show notes. But as for where we are right now, last weekend we came to you live from Denver Comic Con. Early Saturday morning, recording in the press area for Secret Wars 2, Issue 2. And so this week, we're going to be talking about the tie-ins for Secret Wars 2, Number 2. We're going to be talking about Web of Spider-Man, Number 6. We're going to be talking about Amazing Spider-Man, Number 268. And we're going to be talking about Fantastic Four, Number 282. So I think for purposes of reading order or having the story make sense, we're going to start with Web of Spider-Man number 6, and quite a few creators here. We've got Danny Fingeroth on script, we've got Mike Harris on layouts, we've got Mike Zeck, Bob Layton, Simons and Mooney on finishes. I think Simons and Mooney are probably the inkers, and then Bob Sharon is the colorist. So I remember picking this one up off the rack for sure. I definitely was collecting Web of Spider-Man at the time from issue 1, you know, all the way up through past 100. I think I had uninterrupted. So for those who didn't tune in last week, basically the Beyonder met the Heroes for Hire, and he had kind of learned from both homeless woman who's living on the street, and then it was kind of reiterated and reinforced by Luke Cage that the meaning of life was money. Like, you needed money, you needed cash. That's kind of what made the world go round. And cash stood for gold. And whenever you got services or you purchased goods, somebody always had to get paid. So being the quick learner that he is, the Beyonder basically said, okay, thank you for teaching me, Heroes for Hire. Now someone must pay. That someone is me. I'll give you cash, but not really cash because cash stands for gold, so I'll just give you gold. and he proceeded to turn their entire building, their Manhattan skyscraper on Park Avenue, into gold. So you can imagine what happened. Every inanimate object that was in the building turned to gold, and it basically collapsed under its own weight. So that's kind of where we are when Web of Spider-Man 6 starts off. And basically, it starts off with the kingpin of crime. He's on a call. He's making a deal. He's going to send his soldiers, I'll call them soldiers rather than goons, out to kind of try to keep a lid on the situation. Then the story shifts to Mary Jane Watson, and she's awake in the middle of the night. She's recently has discovered in Spider-Man continuity that Peter Parker and Spider-Man are one and the same, and she's worried about what that means and how for her it means she can never be with him because she could never have a relationship with somebody who she was worried about all the time, wouldn't know where they were at, what they were doing, didn't know if they'd make it home alive. So as she looks out the window, having a cup of tea, trying to go to sleep, I would hope it's a decaffeinated tea if she's trying to get to sleep. But anyway, as she is looking out the window, she sees fires in the distance and a whole area that's blacked out. And what she's actually looking at is the area around the building that has collapsed. So Spider-Man's the only one left there. After the Beyonder turned it into gold, he disappeared along with Power Man and Iron Fist, who actually had been plucked from an earlier time. Beyonder returned them to their time. So Spider-Man's the only one that's left on the scene when this goes down. And we see the giant splash page with the building definitely gold. And it collapsed upon itself, and we see the title there, Gold Rush. So Spider-Man's kind of beside himself. He's like, this can't be happening. He thinks back to the previous hours, things that happened during the day, the Beyonder meeting him at his apartment, him showing the Beyonder how to use the bathroom, the Iron Fist and Power Man interaction, and Spider-Man proceeds to start rescuing people from the building because although it was the middle of the night, there's still a few guards here and there. So he manages to find a couple of them that are basically pinned down by a plastic palm tree that has now turned to gold. And meanwhile, we see two lovebirds that are out on a date across the street on a rooftop looking. They're like, that building looks like it's gold. They're like, nah, it couldn't be. That's impossible. It must be the fire playing tricks on our eyes. We see a couple of other New Yorkers driving late at night that have a bit of a fender bender as they drive past the building, aren't even mad about getting in an accident because they're just like, we couldn't have seen that right. I won't tell anybody if you don't. Deal? Other guy says deal. And they both think to themselves, I'll never drive drunk again. So a little bit of a sign of the times. We also see a couple of criminals across the street in the alley saying, it looks like gold. I'm not sure, but let's go check it out closer because the next stop might be Easy Street. And then we see that most people are just sleeping through it. Most New Yorkers are asleep. It is the middle of the night. So next we see the Kingpin is actually on the phone with the White House. The powers that be in the government have made a deal with the Kingpin to basically use his men and his influence to kind of cordon off the city because they can get there much, or I shouldn't say cordon off the city, but cordon off the building, the blocks where it's obvious that this building is gold and it would cause panic that much gold hitting the open market, right? So they've sort of made a deal with the devil until the federal emergency response team or whatever it is, the federal authorities can show up there. So Spider-Man rescues a bunch of people from the building. There's some New York police officers there. And then, as I said, a lot of armed goons, 300 armed goons, one of the policemen says. And then we see someone asking for their attention. His name's Charles Anderson. He is from some sort of federal agency. And he's taking charge of the situation. Meanwhile, the building's owner shows up and Anderson's like, I'm glad you're here. I'm going to pay you off. I'm going to give you fair market value. Obviously, the guy's not happy about that. He's like, what are you talking about? I own that building and it's now gold. Like, whatever amount you give me is not enough. And Anderson has him hauled off. And Spider-Man's wondering, you know, handled that guy a little rough for my taste, plus all the Kingpin's goons, like, what's going on? Could the government be corrupt? They're in the league with Kingpin. What's going on? Meanwhile, Anderson spots him and asks him to come over. And he's like, we got it. We'll take it from here, Spider-Man. Take off. And Spider-Man's like, I'm not going to take off. There are still people to be rescued. They even fire their guns at him. The Spider-Sense he manages to dodge. And he's like, you're a real hero, Anderson. You deal with the Kingpin, try to kill somebody who only wants to help. Hope you're real proud of yourself. And Anderson calls off the cops. He's like, all right, stop shooting at him. Let him go. Meanwhile, there's an interlude with Aunt May and her boyfriend Nathan. And we find out that they're in financial crisis. They're in danger of losing their house. And May expresses her wish that Peter not find out. And Nathan's like, Peter, I already told him. I thought it was better this way. And Aunt May worries that Peter worries too much. Meanwhile, the federal forces have arrived at the site. They start cutting the building apart with acetylene torches. They're basically boxing it up in some nondescript crates and transporting it to a ship. And they're taking it out to the middle Atlantic and dumping it into a 7-mile deep trench in the Atlantic where hopefully it'll be gone forever. And we won't have to worry about a massive amount of gold basically toppling the world's economy. Next page, we get a montage of Spider-Man rescuing those that were trapped in the building. Because although it was the middle of the night, it is New York, so there are, you know, several people there, and one life was unfortunately taken in the collapse of the building. And Spider-Man silently curses the Beyonder. It says so. It's 4 a.m. He's very weary. He's very alone. He's sitting next to a garbage can, and there's a cardboard box, or formerly a cardboard box, now a gold box next to him. It was filled with popcorn, right? Like useless packing popcorn. It's all gold now. It's priceless. And he thinks to himself about how, you know, the government's in bed with the Kingpin, supposedly, where he's risked his life to save everybody. But does anybody offer him gold? No, they offer him lead. They shoot at him. He's like, how about the stuff in this garbage can? Look at this notebook. Somebody threw it out. It's garbage. He's like, what if I took it? Who would know? Who would prosecute me for taking garbage? He's like, no, it's the government, it's stealing, no matter how I rationalize it. Then he hears a voice. There's actually one person left that he still needs to rescue. So he finds a guy who's basically trapped under his desk chair. And after moving that, he's telling the guy, okay, I got to get you out of here, but I can't even lift you because you've got so much stuff, so much gold in your pockets. He's all, it's my personal belongings. It's not even the company's. Just because it's gold doesn't make it not mine. Spider-Man's like, I'm sorry, that's the way it is. Can't let you take it. Besides the weight, I'd never be able to take you out of here. And the guy doesn't want to give it up. But then the ceiling starts to collapse and the guy realizes, I don't want to die. Maybe I am happy to leave this stuff behind. What a waste, you know. And he takes him out and he sees that Anderson is meeting with somebody in a limousine. And it turns out it's the Kingpin. And Spider-Man overhears that the Kingpin is getting like a dozen golden typewriters, millions of dollars worth of gold, for basically keeping anybody from discovering the building before the federal forces could get there. And Spider-Man loses it. He's like, I can't stand it. It's not fair. It's not right. I got shot at. I risked my life to save people. You know, J. Jonah Jameson's got the hate campaign against me. Meanwhile, creeps like Jameson and Kingpin live in the lap of luxury, snap their fingers, get whatever they want. He's like, I'm getting mine. It's my turn. And he goes back to the garbage can and he gets the gold notebook. And then he swings over by back where Anderson is as the limousine pulls away. And as Anderson is thinking to himself, proud of yourself, Anderson? Spider-Man, like penny for your thoughts, right? Says the same thing. Proud of yourself, Anderson? And he tells him. He's like, yeah, it's me. It's Spider-Man, you know, the innocent guy trying to save lives. That Spider-Man. And I can't believe that you gave him all those typewriters. And the Kingpin got his reward, so I'm getting mine. And he shows him the gold notebook and swings off. So it's an interesting take, right? Like, I think most of us wouldn't feel so guilty. I mean, there's so much gold, right? And Spider-Man taking a little bit isn't going to affect the economy. If you have several million tons of gold flood the market, obviously that's going to affect the economy. But why shouldn't Spider-Man take a little bit that nobody's going to notice? Nobody would even known about if he hadn't said anything, right? So it's kind of interesting because this dilemma of what to do with this notebook that he takes is part of this all the Spider-Man comics for months, 6 months, if not longer, where he's like, he feels guilty about taking it. Oh, what should I do with it? I mean, honestly, for the amount of guilt and angst he feels over it, he should have just left it there. But again, it goes to what a hero he is. But at the same time, it's like, man, he's not hurting anybody by doing it, right? And he does risk his life. He's worried about his Aunt May. I think more than anything, that's probably why he takes it. And wouldn't you think, like, he's a better hero if he doesn't have those other, like, considerations and things that he has to worry about, like Aunt May? You know, I mean, we saw recently, I mean, I understand it's a totally different era of Spider-Man. He was able to do a lot of good when he started Parker Industries and, you know, he was able to, like, make technology that helped people, whatever. I mean, he's a brilliant guy, so you could really argue in a way by giving him more resources, he's going to end up helping more people. But that's not, again, different era of Spider-Man, not where they were going in the story right now. This is much more of the, you know, original angst-ridden Peter Parker. But I guess it does show some maturity of character. Like, I don't think the Peter Parker that's in the current comics, you know, kind of broke once again. Dan Slott sort of brought him low before he let him go when he finished his run with 801, which was just released this last Wednesday. But I think that Spider-Man would have no problem taking, you know, a little bit of gold if it meant he could get back on his feet and help people in the long run. So it's pretty interesting, but it really did run for a long time. And it was like, man, for a long time, that was a subplot going on. Like, what's he going to do with the gold? What's he going to do with the gold? Almost to the point where it got a little tiresome at one point. So, all right, let's move on to Amazing Spider-Man number 268. It also has I don't think I mentioned the cover on the other one. They're kind of interesting covers. One of the covers, the cover for Web of Spider-Man number 6, is Spider-Man in his red costume swinging toward the building, and it's got like multiple exposures, right? Like, you see him closest in the foreground, but then there's other versions of him as he swings closer, and the gold skyscraper in the background. 268, Amazing Spider-Man 268, is the opposite. It's him swinging away from the building, him closest to us in the black costume, and then there's other kind of exposures of him as he you can see him swinging away from the building. So a couple of interesting covers kind of mirror each other. So the creative team for 268, we've got writer Tom DeFalco. We've got Ron Frenz on pencils. We've got Joseph Rubinstein on finishes. We've got Joe Rosen on letters and Bob Sharon on colors. So this one starts off with, we see the federal forces. It's now 6:30 a.m. Spider-Man is swinging away from the building. It's cordoned off. There's tarps and everything keeping people, New Yorkers, away. They've cordoned off all of Park Avenue. And we get some exposition here from Spider-Man. Again, it's very typical of its time. Basically a whole page of Spider-Man recapping what happened in the last issue of Web of Spider-Man, as well as the events from Secret Wars 2, issue 2, that led up to that. So he's pretty tired from being out all night and rescuing people, gets back to his apartment, has a quick bite to eat, turns on the news, and he hears them saying they're not sure what the danger is, what the nature of the disaster is, but the assured authorities have assured the public there's no danger. And Spider-Man's like, oh, that's, I don't know what terrifies me more. The global depression, if everybody finds out about all the gold, or the fear that the government might be in bed with the kingpin, and what am I going to do with this notebook? And he's like, I'm too tired to even think about it. I'll worry about it tomorrow. And he flops into bed and goes to sleep. So meanwhile, back at the site, we see that the gold is continuing to be cut up and hauled away in cranes. to some waiting trucks packed into nondescript crates, taken to the pier in the Hudson River, and then with fighter escorts, the ships take it out to the middle of the Atlantic, as I mentioned last time, dump it in a trench, and we see that there's actually a satellite watching from above, sends it to the Pentagon. Somebody there gets a picture, faxes it over to the Kingpin, and the Kingpin's right-hand man, the Arranger, lets the Kingpin know where exactly it's going. So even though the Kingpin already got his gold typewriters, it's not enough. He feels like he's the Kingpin of crime. He controls everything in New York, and so he deserves his cut of the gold that's passing through his city. Meanwhile, to Daily Bugle, J. Jonah Jameson is yelling at all his staff that none of them have managed to find out what's going on Park Avenue. Peter shows up and he's like, "Oh, Peter, my son, I know you're going to come through for me with pictures of what's going on." And even though Peter knows what's going on, he's like, "No, I don't have any pictures." Jameson screams at him, out, get out. Don't come back without any photos, you miserable, ungrateful excuse for a freelancer." And Peter's like, "But Mr. Jameson, dad," because earlier, you know, he called him son. And Robbie Robertson's like, "You better go now, Peter." So Peter's thinking to himself as he swings away through the city back toward the side of the building, you know, maybe Jameson's right. He's only interested in selling more newspapers, but does the public have a right to know, and especially about the government's connection with the Kingpin? So as Spider-Man's watching, we see that they're hauling away the last of the gold, and the Kingpin and the Arranger have made preparations to actually hijack a shipment of the gold. They know that they can't, because of the fighter escorts, they can't really prevent the gold from getting on the ship. But what they do is, after the gold has been dumped, the fighters head back to escort the next ship. And by helicopter, they take their own men in and drop gas on one of the ships, lock all the men in the cargo hold, and take over. So as the last shipment heads to the pier with the earlier met Charles Anderson on board, they load it up, and the plan, as Charles Anderson finds out once he gets on the ship and heads to the bridge, the Arranger is there waiting for him, and they lock him up with the rest of the crew. And as I said, they find out that the plan is to dump the gold early, because as I said, the fighter escorts are going to prevent them from deviating from course. But if they dump the gold early and it doesn't go 7 miles deep, the Kingpin's own divers can then get to it much more easily. It's, you know, 7 miles deep under the ocean, no one's going to be able to get to it. But if they dump it early, they should be able to recover it. But what's actually happened is Spider-Man had followed the last load because he wanted to see what was up with Charles Anderson and why and what was going to happen to the gold. So he's actually stowed away on the ship. He takes out all the Kingpin's goons. He rescues Anderson and prevents the people from dumping the gold where they can retrieve it for themselves. But one thing Spider-Man did learn while he was aboard the ship, based on the conversation between Anderson and the Arranger, Spider-Man realizes that the government kind of knew they were getting in bed with the devil and did what they felt they had to do, but they're certainly not in league with the Kingpin the way that Spider-Man was worried that they were. So he still doesn't know what to do with the notebook, but for now, at least he doesn't have to worry about the government being as corrupt as he was somewhat worried that it was. All right, and the last issue that crosses over with Secret Wars 2 issue 2 is Fantastic Four number 282. This one is written by John Byrne, pencils by John Byrne, inks are by Jerry Ordway, and colors are by Glynis Oliver. So this one starts off with Franklin Richards having a dream of about Power Pack, who he eventually ends up joining. When he goes to tell his mother and father about the dream, they're still in the Avengers Mansion because their headquarters or Baxter Building got blown up recently in Fantastic Four 272. But based on what we saw in Secret Wars 2, number 2, with the Hate Monger and the Psycho Man and the couple previous issues of Fantastic Four, basically in Secret Wars number 2, Hate Monger transformed the Invisible Girl or Invisible Woman into Malice, basically flipped her emotions around. So anytime she felt love, she felt hate. Anytime she feels hate, she feels love. So she basically despises the rest of the Fantastic Four to this incredible extent, because normally she loves them to that incredible extent, right? So she was basically a pretty big enemy of the Fantastic Four for a couple issues. And in Secret Wars 2, we saw her become Malice, and then we Fantastic Four 281 takes place during that same issue, because later in that same issue, Secret Wars 2, number 2, we see her kind of cured of her Malice persona. So the Psycho Man escaped from the Fantastic Four in Secret Wars 2, number 2. So they know that he escaped to the Microverse. So despite the fact that they don't have a lot of their equipment, Reed Richards, with the help of the Avengers Mansion Lab, recreates the Reducto craft that will allow them to travel to the Microverse to take on the Psycho Man. So it's things aren't going really, really well. Susan seems a little bit unstable, and she has a really, really bad mullet hairdo that Byrne has given her in these issues. I mean, it is truly awful. I don't know what he's thinking. I mean, it is just horrible. But anyway, yeah, she's definitely still feeling some effects of having her emotions played with. She doesn't really seem very stable. But despite that, I mean, she talks about not wanting to bring the Psycho Man to justice, but rather to get vengeance. So the rest of the team knows they need to keep a close eye on her. But they take her along to the Microverse. When they get to the Microverse, it's not long before the Psycho Man captures all of them. And we'll see where this story goes from there if you keep reading Fantastic Four. So it's kind of an interesting issue, in as much as it doesn't tie in really to Secret Wars 2 at all, other than it gives us some follow-up to them pursuing the character we saw in the shadows of Secret Wars 2, number 2, who was kind of pulling the strings of the Hate Monger and ultimately was responsible for Sue Storm becoming Malice. And as far as the Beyonder showing up in this issue, there's literally one panel where we see that as the Fantastic Four heads to the Microverse, the Beyonder is actually having dinner at some swanky New York restaurant. And I don't remember who it is. Maybe we'll see in issue 3 of Secret Wars, but it's a kind of a smarmy looking guy in a suit saying, "Listen, Beyonder, baby, there's two kinds of people in this world, winners and losers. Stick with me and you'll be one of the winners." And we see that scene while Reed Richards is like, who knows where the Beyonder is and what could be occurring at this very moment. And I hate to think of what could happen if he comes under the wrong influence. So kind of some foreshadowing there. So yeah, as I mentioned, this issue really doesn't tie in much, not even as strongly as the Spider-Man issues do, which, you know, deal with the aftermath of the Beyonder's consequences of turning the building into gold. I mean, this does follow up or tie in as much as it gives us more of the story of what's going on with the Fantastic Four, as we saw in Secret Wars 2, number 2, when they're dealing with all the people that were being influenced by the Hate Monger. They were turning into mobs. They were looting and attacking each other. That all kind of got resolved in Secret Wars 2, number 2. But obviously the Psycho Man didn't get captured. So this is continuing that story, but it's not a conclusion at all. It's barely the start of the Fantastic Four versus the Psycho Man. So in that way, it doesn't really tie in that much, as I said. And the first third of the issue is Franklin Richards and his dream involving the Power Pack. So this is one you could probably skip, because again, I think that from what we saw in Secret Wars 2, number 2, if you really want to understand the story of the Hate Monger and Malice and all that, you really need to go back to like Fantastic Four 280 or even 279 and read 279, 280, 281 before you read 282, because this is almost an epilogue. Those other issues kind of happen during the same story, they happen at the same night, on the same night as Secret Wars 2, number 2. I mean, you even see on some of the pages for Secret Wars 2, number 2, where it says, you know, they show scenes of the Fantastic Four dealing with the mob, and it's got editor's note there. You know, for more information, go check out, you know, Spider-Man or Fantastic Four 281. But then those aren't even considered crossovers. I would kind of consider those more crossovers than this, but it's up to you if, you know, if you want to track those issues down and read them. I mean, Byrne's run in Fantastic Four is pretty incredible anyway. Although I do feel like this particular storyline is hurt, because Byrne has to kind of shoehorn it in with the Secret Wars 2, number 2. It's a little choppy. It's not the best paced of his Fantastic Four stuff. But again, it's not really his fault. It's because it has to tie in with the Secret Wars 2 crossover. So I do find the whole gold notebook thing really interesting. As I said, that continues on for a long time in the Spider-Man titles. It's been so long since I've read them, I don't honestly remember what he ultimately decides to do. I think he ends up selling it for some cash, but I can't remember. I just know for a long time he has it in his apartment. He agonizes over it. So that's pretty pretty interesting as well. But anyway, you know, these are, as I said, this is some good John Byrne stuff. His Fantastic Four run is classic reading and good, solid Bronze Age Spider-Man stories. So it was definitely fun to revisit them, although none of them really had that much of an outcome on the Secret Wars 2 storyline in the long run. But we're getting ready, I think with issue 4 is when Secret Wars 2 really starts to hit its stride. 1 and 2 we've read so far have really been kind of set up, so I'm trying to remember where exactly it turns. It might be the next issue, issue 3, but I think more likely with issue 4 is when it really takes off. So once again, I want to thank everyone for listening. Don't forget, you can go to lrmonline.com for all past episodes of the podcast. Our podcast is also available on iTunes. I don't always mention that, but I probably should. So if you don't want to listen on the website or go to the website and download it, you can just do a search for The Comic Source on iTunes and you can find us there. Likewise, if you have a podcast app on your phone, that those apps usually just do a search from what's called an RSS feed, which we have. So if you just search on your podcast application on your phone, you should be able to find The Comic Source no problem. Pretty soon we should be on Stitcher, Google Play, hopefully Spotify, and all the other great spots as well. It's just a matter of me getting it set up. So when it's a choice between creating a podcast, producing a podcast, and doing other kind of maintenance stuff, I always end up creating more content for you guys. But I know I need to do that as well, just to keep the numbers up. That being said, numbers have been really great lately. So again, thanks for listening, everybody. Really appreciate all your support. If you do go to LRM Online to check out the podcast, don't forget there's a lot of other coverage from pop culture, movies, TV shows, all that kind of good stuff there, as well as other podcasts dealing with some of those subjects. San Diego Comic-Con is coming up really soon, so we'll be there. If you are going to be there, please let me know. I'll have the Comic Source lanyards that I'd love to gift to you, as well as take a picture. It's always great to meet fans. Actually, this next weekend, a week from today, I suppose you'd say, Las Vegas, amazing Las Vegas Comic-Con is happening. I wasn't necessarily planning on going, because I was just in Denver and I've got San Diego coming up, but I've got a press pass and the chance to sit down and talk with some people. So I think I'll probably head to Amazing Las Vegas for at least a couple of the days of the show. So covering a lot of conventions for you guys. So don't forget twitter.com/thecomicsource is where we can be found on Twitter. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three places are great spots to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow along with all that convention coverage that we've been providing for you. So once again, I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.